Hello, welcome to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast, where it is all about helping amazing physicians just like you create a wealthy life free from burnout and with the financial security to practice medicine on your own terms. I'm your host, Dr. Elisa Zhang. Hello, and welcome back to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. The world of retirement planning has significantly changed over the last century. In fact, the concept of retirement as a widespread social norm really only started in the late 19th century, and it wasn't until the mid-20th century that retirement became more common. When Social Security was started in the United States in 1935, life expectancy at birth in the United States was around 60 to 65 years for men and slightly higher for women. As of 2021, the life expectancy is 73.5 years for men and 79.3 years for women born in the United States. And that's the life expectancy at birth. Upon reaching age 65, men in the United States can expect to live 17 more years on average, and women can expect to live 19.7 more years on average. The Social Security Act of 1935 was really designed to provide financial assistance to older Americans who are typically beyond the average life expectancy at that time. Now, Social Security is expected to cover many more years since people live much longer after the age of 65. As an ophthalmologist, I see a lot of older patients. I've had lots of patients in their 90s, and I have seen a patient that is 100 years old. Pension plans became more common in the early to mid-20th century in the United States. The rise of labor unions and collective bargaining likely played a role, as well as the tax incentives introduced by the U.S. tax code. The Revenue Act of 1921 and subsequent amendments encouraged employers to offer pension plans by allowing tax deductions for employer contributions. Offering pension plans became a competitive advantage for employers in order to attract and retain skilled workers. This was especially true in industries where it may be hard to find skilled workers or where other firms or other businesses might try to steal skilled workers from each other. As a side note, this is also why health insurance has been tied to the workplace. There was a time where businesses were restricted in what they could offer new employees, so they started offering employees health insurance as a way to recruit people to work for them. Pension plans provide workers with a sense of financial security and stability, which also made them more likely to stay with the company for the long term. That was the era of someone went to a company and worked there their entire career. Well, we know that era is now long gone. 403B plans were actually established back in 1958 as part of the U.S. tax code. These were initially designed to allow employees of certain tax-exempt organizations like public schools, hospitals, churches, and other nonprofit organizations to save for retirement on a tax-advantaged basis. 403 plans allow employees to contribute a portion of their salary to the plan, and often the employer can also contribute as well. And this was a way to provide retirement savings for employees in the nonprofit sector. It wasn't actually until about two decades later that the 401k plan actually made its debut with the Revenue Act of 1978, which introduced this provision into the U.S. tax code. Initially, 401k plans were created as a supplement to traditional pension plans. This provided employees an additional option to save for retirement. Unlike traditional pension plans, where employers primarily funded retirement benefits, 401k plans allowed employees to contribute a portion of their salary to the plan on a tax-deferred basis. And there could be matching contributions from employers as well. The popularity of 401k plans really grew steadily throughout the 1980s and into the 1990s. This was partially due to the flexibility and portability that it offered employers. This meant that you didn't have to stay at the same company for your entire career in order to have your pension. You could actually move to a different company and take your 401k with you. Pension plans typically tie employees to a single employer for a certain number of years in order to become fully vested. And that number of years could be 5, 10, 15, 20, or even 30 years, as well as have some age component. 401k plans allow employees to take their retirement savings with them if and when they change jobs. The decline of traditional pension plans began around the same time that 401k plans started to gain prominence. There are probably several factors that really contribute to this decline. Some include changes in accounting rules. I think the increasing lifespan of retirees is also an issue because that led to rising costs of providing traditional pension benefits. There are many companies that began to find it financially burdensome to actually maintain pension plans. And so there are many pension plans that ended up underfunded as people started living longer. Many companies actually began freezing or even terminating their pension plans in favor of defined contribution plans like 401ks. Today, 401k plans have become the primary retirement savings vehicles for millions of Americans, with traditional pension plans being much less prevalent, especially in the private sector. For most physicians in the United States, we will need to fund our own retirements. Social Security already pays out more than it receives annually, and it's only projected to be able to pay benefits in full until 2037. I personally think it's a possibility that in the future, Social Security will be significantly taxed for those with other sources of income, basically as a way for the government to take back those Social Security dollars so that they can use it for the elderly who don't have any other means to live on. In episode 8, I reviewed a number of tax advantage accounts, including retirement accounts. In this episode, I'm going to dive a little deeper into specifically 401k and 403b plans. Overall, 403b and 401k plans have a lot of similarities. They're both retirement savings vehicles offered by employers to help employees save and invest for retirement. They are both considered defined contribution plans, whereas pensions are defined benefit plans. The main difference is really that the 401k plan is offered by for-profit companies, which includes corporations and small businesses, and 403b plans are offered by tax-exempt organizations and nonprofits, such as hospitals, public schools, churches, and other nonprofit organizations. Both 401k and 403b plans have annual contribution limits that are set by the IRS. As of 2024, the annual contribution limit for both plans is $23,000 for individuals under the age of 50. Individuals aged 50 and older can make additional catch-up contributions of additional $7,500. Now, the contribution limit is across all 401ks and 403bs. So if you end up changing employers and you put $13,000 in your 401k with your first employer, that means that you can only put $10,000 in the 401k with your second employer. You can't put $23,000 in both 401ks. Employers have the option of matching contributions or even contributing a percentage of the employee's salary towards their 401k or 403b. Even if the employee doesn't actually make any contributions. Employers can set up requirements for at what time their contributions vest, vesting meaning that the employee actually gets to keep the contribution after they leave the company. Some contributions may vest right away. Some may require the employee be at the company for 1, 2, or 3 years before it vests. There can also be partial vesting, so maybe 20% vests the first year, 40% vests the second year, and so on. Both 401k and 403b plans offer a range of investment options, and this includes stock funds, bond funds, or other mutual funds that may mix both stocks and bonds, including target retirement date funds. It's also possible that they may include annuities and possibly the ability to buy individual stock of your employer's company. The investment options offered depends on how the plan is set up by your employer. If you are a partner at a private practice and you think your 401k investment plan options suck, then you may want to consider advocating for yourself as well as everyone else in your practice to change the plan's offering or who you're using to administer the plan. Both 401k and 403b plans are also subject to regulations overseen by the IRS and the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, abbreviated as ERISA. But there are some differences in the rules and regulations that apply to each type of plan. 401k plans are subject to non-discrimination testing requirements to ensure that plans do not favor highly compensated employees. 403b plans may be subject to similar requirements, but they often have more lenient testing rules due to the nature of the organizations that offer them. That being said, the cynical side of me thinks about how much the CEO of hospitals get paid compared to physicians at hospitals. I always wonder if the C-suite is getting something a little sweeter. 401ks and 403bs come in two flavors, traditional and Roth. Your employer may only offer one type or both. With a traditional account, contributions are pre-tax, meaning you don't pay taxes on the money contributed. This means that your taxable income is reduced by the amount you contribute, so you pay less taxes on your annual income. With a Roth account, contributions are post-tax, meaning you do pay taxes on the money that is contributed into the account. In both the traditional and Roth retirement accounts, the money grows tax-free while it's in the account. It may be more accurate to say that in the traditional retirement account, the money grows tax-deferred, whereas in the Roth account, it grows tax-free. Because you never pay taxes on the money in the traditional account, you will pay taxes when you withdraw funds from the account, and that money will be taxed at ordinary income tax rates, not at capital gains tax rates. That's why I said that the earnings in a traditional retirement account are really tax-deferred as opposed to tax-free, since you do pay taxes on the earnings when you withdraw from the account. The IRS also requires you make required minimum distributions, or RMDs, starting at age 73. After all, the IRS has been waiting for that tax money, and they want to get it eventually. With the Roth account, since taxes were already paid on the money that's in the account, there are no taxes on withdrawal, and there are no required minimum distributions. If you do withdraw from your Roth account early, before a certain age set by the IRS, then you will potentially pay taxes and/or penalties on earnings that occurred on the money that you put into the Roth account, but you can withdraw contributions from a Roth account without paying taxes on it. I have other episodes of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast that really talk a lot more about traditional versus Roth accounts. So for the rest of this episode, I'm really going to focus on 401ks and 403bs as a whole and try not to go through all the intricacies of a traditional versus a Roth. One thing I do want to emphasize is that the tax code is really all about creating incentives to get people to do things that the government wants to promote. The tax code set up 401ks and 403bs to incentivize individuals to save for their own retirement. Therefore, these accounts were created with penalties for withdrawing the money earlier than what's considered retirement age. The penalty is usually an additional 10% on any early distribution on top of any other tax that's owed. Some people have a hard time putting money away for something that seems so far into the future as retirement. This leads to some people deferring signing up or contributing for the retirement plans offered by their employer. For the vast majority of people, this is a mistake. Time is one of the greatest advantages to allowing investments to grow. Even a little invested when you're young can become a substantial amount due to the miracle of compounding. If your employer matches any of your contribution, then that's really part of your compensation package that you're leaving on the table if you don't make contributions in order to get that match. The match gives you a guaranteed return on your investment, and you really don't want to miss that. But what if you really do need money and the only place you can tap into is your retirement account? There are actually a lot of exceptions so that you can avoid the additional 10% penalty on an early withdrawal, depending on your situation. For starters, if you became disabled and are no longer able to work, then you can withdraw from your qualified retirement account without penalty. Essentially, your disability is leading to an early retirement. If you become terminally ill, then distributions on or after the date that you've been certified by a physician as having a terminal illness are penalty-free. There's also what's been called the Rule of 55. The Rule of 55 states that if you turn 55 during the calendar year where you leave or lose your job, then you can take distributions from your 401k or 403b that is with the employer that you're leaving without penalty. The plan does have to stay with your employer while you're taking those early withdrawals for you to avoid the penalty. And you don't have to be exactly age 55. It's any age 55 or older. And if you're a public service employee, like a policeman or fireman, then that age is actually even decreased to 50. If there is a federally declared disaster where you live, you may qualify to take up to $22,000 if you have sustained an economic loss due to that disaster. If you end up incurring medical expenses greater than 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, you can also take distributions in the amount of unreimbursed medical expenses without any penalty. You can take distributions of up to $5,000 per child for qualified birth or adoption expenses, penalty-free. A more recent exception is that victims of domestic abuse by a spouse or domestic partner can receive up to the lesser of $10,000 or 50% of account distributions that were made after December 31st, 2023. Another new exception that started in 2024 is the ability to take up to $1,000 penalty-free per calendar year for personal and family emergency expenses. For the link to the IRS website with the full list of exceptions, see the show notes. If you really need to withdraw money early from your retirement account for a reason that doesn't allow an exception, you may be able to qualify for a hardship withdrawal. A hardship withdrawal is possible to cover expenses for a, quote, immediate and heavy financial need, end quote. While the IRS specifies that consumer purchases, such as a boat or television, is not considered an immediate and heavy financial need, and quite honestly, on the IRS website, they actually specifically say that a boat or television is not something that's considered immediate and heavy financial need. It does say a financial need may be immediate and heavy even if it was, quote, reasonably foreseeable or voluntarily incurred by the employee, end quote. Under the Safe Harbor IRS regulations, an employee is automatically considered to have an immediate and heavy financial need if the distribution is for any of these following items: medical care expenses for an employee, the employee's spouse, dependents, or beneficiary, costs directly related to the purchase of an employee's principal residence, but that specifically excludes mortgage payments, tuition, related educational fees, and room and board expenses for the next 12 months of post-secondary education for the employee or the employee's spouse, children, dependents, or beneficiary, payments necessarily to prevent the eviction of the employee from the employee's principal residence or foreclose on the mortgage on that residence, funeral expenses for the employee spouse, children, dependents, or beneficiary. Of course, if there are funeral expenses for the employee, then the employee is dead, and I'm just listing all the things that is specified on the IRS website. And the last thing on their list is certain expenses to repair damage to employee's principal residence. So if you do have something that happens to your home and you really need to repair it, like you need a new roof, you could potentially go to your 401k and get a hardship distribution. Hardship distributions are subject to income taxes unless they consist of Roth contributions. They still may also be subject to the 10% additional tax for taking an early distribution if it doesn't qualify for the exemptions approved by the IRS that I mentioned earlier. If you take a hardship distribution, you can't repay it back to the loan or roll it over to any other plan or an IRA. You also won't qualify for hardship withdrawal if you have any other assets you can draw on or if insurance is actually covering the need. If you have another reason you feel it's important enough to tap into your retirement savings, some employers do allow employees to take out a loan against their contributions that are in their 401k or 403b plan. This is really a form of the employee borrowing from themselves. The plan will specify the interest rate that's charged. So when you take out a loan against your 401k, you're really paying yourself interest. That sounds like a good thing, but you're also possibly missing larger gains that are possible when the money's invested. So if the stock market goes up 22%, but you're only paying yourself 6% interest, you're still kind of losing out. Of course, if the stock market goes down and you're paying yourself 60% interest, you could say that you were winning that game. However, the stock market more often goes up than goes down, so you're more often going to miss out on gains. The average rate of return of the stock market is generally going to be higher than whatever interest rate you're paying yourself on the loan that you took out against your 401k or 403b. If you leave a job before the loan's repaid, you'll either have to repay it in a lump sum or face that 10% penalty and pay any taxes owed on the money for the early withdrawal. And this is if you leave or if you are told to leave. So it's not necessarily something completely in your control. Remember, job security for physicians is really not what we used to think it was. When you leave a job, you do have a few options of what you do with your 401k or 403b after you leave. The first option is that you can just leave it with your old employer. In many cases, employers will permit a departing employee to keep their 401k or 403 account with their old plan indefinitely, though the employee can't make any further contributions to it. This generally applies to accounts that are worth at least $5,000. If there's less than $5,000 in the account, the employer may give the employee no choice but to move the money elsewhere. You can also move your 401k or 403b to your new employer. This does require filing out some paperwork, but it is generally doable. It does depend on whatever plan your new employer has, so you will need to look into that. You can also roll over your 401k or 403b to an IRA. If you have a Roth 401k or 403b, then there's really no problem rolling it over to a Roth IRA. However, if you have a traditional 401k or 403b, and you roll it over to a traditional IRA, this can cause issues for doing backdoor Roth IRA contributions, which is something you'll want to consider before doing that. If you have any kind of side gig or side business, then it's possible you could open a solo 401k and then roll over your 401k into that solo 401k. And your last option is that you can withdraw the money, which is generally a bad idea unless you urgently need it. Depending on your age, you're going to pay that 10% distribution penalty as well as any other taxes owed. If you have a Roth 401k or Roth 403b, then you can withdraw your contributions tax-free and without penalty at any time, as long as you've had the account for at least 5 years. However, you will have penalties if you withdraw on any of the earnings or profits. And either way, you're still decreasing your retirement savings, which you may regret later. I hope I haven't overwhelmed you with all that information. Really, the takeaway is that most physicians benefit from contributing to their 401k or 403b. And if possible, I'd really highly suggest that you max out those contributions. There are ways to get to the money in those accounts if absolutely necessary. The only financial security is the one we create for ourselves. There are people out there that call retirement accounts money jail. Typically, those are people who invest in real estate, and they really rather have the money not in their retirement account so that they can use it for real estate investments. Because there are so many tax advantages to investing in real estate, it doesn't really make sense to invest in a lot of different real estate deals through a qualified retirement account. That being said, I'm really a fan of having a lot of diversification across the board. So yes, there are definitely some real estate investors and some physician real estate investors that have done extremely well and don't have anything in the stock market and really just invest all their assets in real estate. And they're doing great with it. And I'm not saying that they're wrong for not having retirement accounts. But if you're not passionate about real estate investing and you're not spending a significant amount of time educating yourself on real estate investing and actively being involved in real estate investing, I do think having the widest range of diversification is the best way to invest. And having the most diversification really means still having some investments in stocks and bonds through low-cost index funds. While I am a fan of real estate investing and have been investing in real estate since 2008, I still maximize all my retirement accounts, and my retirement accounts are invested in stock and bond funds. Like I said, what I do for myself is not necessarily right for everyone, but I do think the majority of physicians do benefit from contributing to their qualified retirement accounts and having that diversification of investing in stocks and bonds within those accounts. Now, I do have another episode that talks about self-directed retirement accounts where you can invest in real estate or other things other than stocks and bonds with the money set aside in retirement accounts. And if you are a successful real estate investor, it totally may make sense not to contribute at all to qualified retirement plans. This is where personal finance is personal. If you would like help getting your finances in order, consider working with me as your money coach. You can set up a free consultation call on my website, www.growyourwealthymindset.com. We'll talk about your current situation, your goals, what obstacles are preventing you from getting to those goals, and how I can help you reach those goals. I'm not a financial planner, but I do believe all of us physicians are smart enough to know how to manage our own money. And sometimes it just takes some guidance, some education, and some mindset work to get us there. Thank you for being a listener of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast, and I'll be back next week with another episode. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you could share it with your friends and colleagues. And now for the disclaimer. I am not a certified financial planner, accountant, or attorney, and nothing I say should be construed as professional investment, tax, or legal advice. This show is primarily for your education and entertainment. I am a physician, but I'm probably not your physician. So if you need any medical advice, please contact your own physician. Thank you.